Mm-hmm. All right.
So the button is pushed. Technology is working. It's a miracle.
Good.
So to start out, I have your resignation letter from the 31st, from the 31st of August, 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, aside from appearing to be very happy to have worked for Vicatea, you talk about your kind of nomadic life.
Yes.
So tell me about how you ended up with Vicatea, but how that fit in with your nomadic life moving from place to place.
I will. I'd moved to Oregon from Alaska, where I'd lived for 14 years, and I moved to Oregon in February 1974, primarily because my husband was appointed director of recreation on the Mount Hood National Forest. But as soon as I got there, I began commuting back to Anchorage to run a campaign for a friend of mine who was Secretary Hickel under Nixon.
Uh-huh.
He was the man that was fired by Nixon. And he was running for governor, and I was running the primary campaign. Well, we lost the primary campaign in an open primary that was popular at the time in Alaska. And so I came back to Gresham, where I was having a house built, in August. Soon after that, State Senator Atiyah called me and asked to meet with me to talk about working on his campaign for governor. I agreed to the meeting. It was pretty late in the campaign to jump into a campaign for a new candidate, but I was experienced, so I thought I'd take a look at it. And I went to his office, and he took me into the boardroom of one of the banks where one of his chief personnel persons was running the bank. And he introduced me to everybody in the boardroom. And he said, this is the lady I want to work on the campaign. And so I said I would do that, but I looked at this campaign book and the plans for the campaign, and excuse me, and I found out that it was basically they hadn't done the things you're supposed to do in a campaign, and it would just be a miracle if I could bring it off. So I had won three big campaigns in Alaska for Nixon and two campaigns for Senator Ted Stevens. But in those cases, I had 6 months to do those campaigns. So anyway, Senator Atiyah did ask me to help, and I did, but we lost that campaign. Then I went to work for Senator Packwood on a special assignment, and Senator Atiyah asked Packwood if he could borrow me back to run the Oregon State Republican Convention that was being held in Portland. And so I did that. And I did that. It was especially important to Senator Atiyah because I had invited my friend Morris Thompson, who was Nixon's head of Indian Affairs. He was an Indian from Alaska, and I knew him very well. And I knew Vice President Rockefeller because he and I had worked for Senator Stevens together. And so I asked Senator Atiyah if we could have those people come to kind of add a little lift to the convention. And he agreed, and we did. If we fast forward, it was very successful, and when that was over, I left to run back to Packwood. Then I ran Clay Myers' campaign for treasurer. Mm-hmm. Then Senator Atiyah asked me to run the Oregon State Republican Party, which I did. Then if we fast forward to December 1978, don't know why I have such a gravelly throat this morning. We fast forward to December 1978, and I have now left Salem and Portland, and I'm living in Ashland because my husband...
That's great. No, that's good. I grew up in Medford, so...
Oh, okay. Well, I moved to Ashland. I had a house built there. I moved to Ashland with my husband, who was on the he had an office in Yreka, California, but our headquarters was in San Francisco. While I was in San Francisco in December 1978, I got a call from a newly elected governor, Atiyah, asking me to come back to Oregon and work for him. So I was stunned, but I love Governor Atiyah. I flew home from there, went directly in to congratulate him, and that's when we had all the offices. We borrowed the legislative offices for the transition period. And I went in to see Governor Atiyah to congratulate him. And he said, and I'll never forget this, he said, you know, you're the first person that can call me Victor. And I said, I can't do that, Governor. And I never could, and I never have.
Yeah.
He asked me to take over for his friend Travis Cross and serve as his special assistant for executive appointments. And that's what most people today call a headhunter.
Right.
So I needed time to figure out how I could commute from Ashland to Salem, but I did. It took me about 5 minutes to make the decision. I knew I could work it out, even though I had a daughter in college in Southern Oregon and a daughter in high school there. But I said I would. Okay. Then I found out what I was supposed to do. And my first job, is this what you want to know?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
I'm going?
Yeah, you're doing great.
The first job I had was I had to put the cabinet together.
Oof.
And although the governor had some folks in mind, in some cases he did not. And the one I remember most was the Department of Commerce, because he wanted a woman to head the Department of Commerce. And I had to recruit nationwide. And what I did was I knew a lot of my friends from Alaska. I was very well acquainted in Alaska. So a lot of my friends from Alaska wanted a spot in the new Oregon government. But I had discouraged them because I knew the governor wanted Oregonians. So I also had connections in Washington, D.C. So I basically put out the word that I was looking for an executive woman to run the Department of Commerce for Governor Atiyah in Oregon. And I found a woman in Boston, and she agreed to come to Salem and meet with the governor for an interview. And she was great. The governor liked her. And we had no problem getting her through the confirmation process. She is now deceased, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all worked well. Once that was in place, I began to work on what I recall was about 400 appointments to volunteer boards and commissions. So I set up a program to work based basically on when terms expired. And then when the terms expired, I checked to find out first what the board and commission did. Why do we have them? Why are they here? Who's on them and why? And I developed a one-page form so any candidates interested in applying for those positions could also do so equally. And I recruited statewide. I contacted current members to see if they wanted reappointment. I knew the governor wanted people from throughout the state, including all the little towns and communities. I knew that it had to be nonpartisan. And so I had some meetings, and especially I remember meeting with the labor folks at and I gave a recruitment speech to about 600 people. I had worked with labor in Alaska, and even though Republicans are not supposed to be good with labor, I have always worked with labor, so I was able to do that. And I especially wanted a guy from labor for the parole board, because that was a paid position, and I knew I would have lots of applicants, but I wanted someone from labor who I could get through the Senate confirmation process. Now, the way it worked is this. I would make a list of all the names who had called or written, who were still on the board, who wanted reappointment. From that list, I would check on their location, the current makeup of the board. I checked with the police for any past issues with the names that I had. I checked with the tax office to see if there were any issues with tax problems. Then I would interview the people on the list. I'd check their resumes, compare the work of the board to their credentials, and from that list I would pre-select three for the governor to consider. But when I met with him, I would show him the entire list of applicants and everyone who had called, every legislator who had said, you've got to go with this person, and so on, so that the governor had a total list, and then I would explain why I pre-selected three, and it usually had to do with their location, if they were from a little town, or if they particularly met the requirements of what the board did. Every week, I would have a private meeting with the governor to go over the appointments for this time period. One time, the governor was still in bed from getting over the flu, and I went to his house with my briefcase full of my report, and he was able to pick from there. Other times, I would ride with him in the back seat of the car with Lon driving, and we would have our meeting there. But I would remind him of their backgrounds, what the board does, and so on, and he would select, and I would then take the name and the bio or resume to the press office for a written press release to be released later that week. Then I would set up the confirmation process if it required confirmation, and many of them did. Then I would phone the nominees who were not selected to thank them for their interest, phone the nominee, tell them that he has been selected, and when that was all finished, once a week I would set up an appointment meeting in the large ceremonial room where the governor would officially swear in the new appointee, and the photographer would be there, and of course lots of family members would come and be present. It was a lovely ceremony, week after week after week. It was always wonderful. It was always a happy experience, and I did this for 4 years until I agreed to join my family in Colorado, where my husband had been transferred once again.
Yes.
On one particular case that I remember was when the governor wanted to appoint a woman to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And we appointed Justice Roberts. It did not matter to the governor that she was the other political party. It never mattered to the governor. He just wanted the best person for the job, and all appointments were nonpartisan. But this time, he really wanted a woman. And I remember I had to call several wannabes that were not women, because they kind of expected to be appointed by this particular governor. So that all worked out. A side note here, I don't really know how the person who replaced me worked with the governor, mm-hmm. but my work was absolutely joyous, and the governor and I always had something extra to discuss at the weekly meetings, especially if we only had one or two appointments to consider that week. And this is just a side issue, but it's kind of interesting to me. For example, once in one of those meetings, he asked me if I would be his notary. And I said, oh, no, I'm not a lawyer. And he said, well, that's okay. You're the only one I want. I want you to be the state notary. So he proceeded to do the paperwork so I would be his notary. Well, he called me in on a separate meeting from my usual meeting and asked me to notarize something. And I was so terrified because he handed it to me and just said, do it. And I thought I was supposed to know what it said legally.
Right.
And I just seen it. He just handed it to me. And he said, oh, no, you just have to notarize my signature. So I did that, and that worked. And he called me in several times over the years and asked me to come in and notarize something important for him. I was very flattered about all that, as it turned out. And then another little side note that has just kind of made my life wonderful there is I always parked in the parking garage downstairs and came up to work through the back elevator. And I always parked right next to the governor. And some of the staff on the governor's staff didn't quite understand why I was so privileged. And so the governor called them all in one day, and he said, I just want you to know that the reason Shirley parks next to me is she has that cute little Porsche, and I like the way it looks next to my car. Don't you love it?
That's wonderful.
So we'd come up. I was always the first person in the office, so I'd come up the back elevator and then usually go to the cafeteria for coffee. And sometimes the governor would come early, too, and then we'd just sit around and have an informal chat with whoever happened to be in the coffee shop at that time. It was usually a legislator. Anyway, I have dozens of stories like that, but the work itself was absolutely joyous. And getting to meet with the governor every week for 4 years was wonderful. At that time, at least, I was the only person that did that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just was treated really, really well by the governor. And I knew it, and he knew it. And I had only two criticisms during the executive appointments that might be of interest, but it just, again, it shows what a wonderful person Governor Attia was. One time Senator Day accused me of some civil rights matter, some appointment I had made, and it was being talked about on the floor of the legislature, and something happened, and he basically told me to get out of the side aisle because of some civil rights matter. And Governor Attia was really mad about that. And so he called in Senator Day, and he said, Senator, I don't think you realize that Shirley was the Alaska governor's chairman of the Commission for Human Rights. She knows all about civil rights and human rights, and she could not be capable of being accused of what you accused her of. And so there were no problems after that, and Senator Day took me out to lunch several times after that. We became fairly good friends.
Wonderful.
The other was a state representative whose name I've forgotten. He was from somewhere in Grants. No, it wasn't Senator Potts, somewhere in Grants Pass. Anyway, we made an announcement of an appointment from his district, and we had not told him in advance, so he did not know it until he read it in the newspaper, and I had not called him, and he was upset, and he wanted to announce the appointment instead of us announcing it, which a lot of the legislators did, and we usually accommodated them. So he thought he had been purposely overlooked. He was very mad. He came in to Governor Attia and said they should fire me because I hadn't handled the procedures properly and I had left him out and he was insulted and all of that. Anyway, Governor Attia just brought him in, brought me in at the same time, and basically Governor Attia said it was just a simple mistake. We are very sorry. And there was never anything else said about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really, really like Governor Attia. He was very good to me. I traveled with him several times. One was to Alaska, and I went with one of the head guys of the Warm Springs Reservation because we went back to an Indian village, and of course I knew everybody in Alaska, and from fishermen to Eskimos, and so I went with Rudy, his name was, I think he's since passed, and I went there for Governor Attia, and that was great. And then I went with Governor Attia when Governor Reagan was running for president. He called Governor Attia and asked the governor to go to Fairbanks, Alaska, and meet with a group of Native Americans. And so the governor, of course, said, "Well, I'll go, but I have to take Shirley." And so we went on that trip together, and that was delightful because coming back, we flew, first of all, the Northern Lights were there.
Wow.
That happened to be for, I told the governor I had arranged it, and the Northern Lights were there. And then the pilot knew we had a governor on the plane, and because I had told him. And so when we flew over Mount McKinley, now called Denali, when we flew over Mount McKinley, we were so close we could have stepped out of the plane on top of that mountain.
Mm.
And so Governor Attia was very impressed with that trip, not so much for his loud, noisy, crude meeting with a group of Indians and Eskimos, which just were not on their best political behavior at the time.
Uh-huh.
But he was very impressed with the trip for those two other reasons. Let's see. What else would you like to know?
Well, let's go back to the appointments. I've talked with several people. Most notable among them is Jack Faust, but there's other people as well. And they also had the governor's ear on, you know, for instance, Jack Faust was sometimes consulted by the governor on judicial appointments.
Yes.
And so did that ever filter through to you, or was the governor in effect using them as a sounding board, and then you were kind of kept insulated from those other people on the outside?
Oh, I wasn't insulated, but we thought very early for some. In a number of matters, it was important that people go directly to the governor and not through the appointments office. It was a matter of, especially with legislators, perhaps with the judicial, I don't remember that with the Barbara Roberts appointment. Mm-hmm. I remember. I worked really hard on that. But the situation you're describing, I believe Governor Attia had lots of input on appointments that he got directly. And sometimes he would tell me, and sometimes, depending on what it was or how important it was, he would just talk to the person who came in to see him.
Yeah.
That's how I remember it.
Okay. Another thing, specifically, I mean, it sounds like you're a version of this as well, but his hiring of Carol Whitney to run his 1978 campaign, his hiring of Jerry Thompson, who he wanted to be chief of staff, and then she didn't come along again until 1981. He was he would meet with people, and within a relatively short time, you know, an hour and a half conversation, he would figure out that this is a person I really want to work with me at a pretty high level. Did you encounter that when you were working, bringing names forward to him, or in the process, you know, him kind of using his own, he called it his gut feeling when he talked about how he understood elections and things like that. When he was using his gut like that and responding, did you encounter that when you were doing appointments?
Not, well, when I would go in with my list, I always had people, I was like the procedural person.
Okay.
I would go in with a name, I would go in with having checked out the background, I would say all the other names, and then I would do that so that if he knew the name, and then he might say, you know, I've been thinking, I really want Carol Whitney on this list.
Right.
He would say things like that from time to time, but he didn't do anything without me knowing it.
Okay.
In other words, it was, he was very, it's almost like he wanted my approval process, meaning going to the police, going to the tax people, going through, he wanted to see if who he wanted, if I would check out who he wanted in addition to what I had already done. That's the only way I know how to describe it.
Yeah.
As far as the 78 people, the people that you mentioned in that other time frame, I wasn't with him for
right.
that whole campaign. I was with Packwood and Myers and the Republican Party and so on. And that's where Carol Whitney came into his life, was during that campaign. And then I think he appointed her before.
Yeah, she's appointed like at the beginning of December in 78.
Right, and then he called, and I was called, and I started my actual work in January of 79.
Yeah.
He called me in December of 78. And my memory is that Carol was there for a month or so, and then she left.
Yeah. Yeah, she says she figured out what the problem was, solved it, and then went on to the Republican National Committee.
Yes. So I don't know, maybe she mentioned me, I don't know, but I thought, I had no idea when Governor Attia called me in San Francisco, first of all, how he found me is still a mystery to
yeah.
me, and but I think he had a wonderful assistant named Glenna Hayden.
Yes.
And said a couple of notes that I made after this conversation. I said some of the appointment, I don't know why, but in my appointment office, I got all kinds of calls that I think were to go to his executive assistant, Glenna Hayden. For example, I had a call from Barry Goldwater, and I had an intern at the office at the time was a total Goldwater fan, and I said, well, why don't you run to the governor's office and tell him that Barry Goldwater is on my phone and see if he wants to come in and take it or if he wants me to have it. I can't remember. I guess we couldn't transfer calls at that time. I don't know, a long time ago. But anyway, that was very exciting. And then on another occasion, Jerry Falwell called, and through a series of conversations, it turned out Governor Attia did not want to meet with him.
Uh-huh.
But in the final analysis, the governor said, well, if he wanted to come to the ceremonial office during an occasion when we are swearing in a new appointee, then the governor will acknowledge him. And as a result, that's just what Jerry Falwell did. He and about six good-looking young CIA-type aides arrived at the ceremonial office that day, and the governor shook hands with all of them, and that was done. So there were lots of exciting things in the appointments office, the executive appointments office, and I loved it there. And I also had some wonderful assistants. For example, my chief assistant was a girl from Salem named Gretchen Clark, and she was a wonderful assistant, and she knew everything about the office, and she did all of the clerical work for my office, which was absolutely, totally fabulous. And then I had two interns. One was a Willamette graduate. Her name was Kelly Miner. She still lives in Salem. And she was an intern, and my daughter Kira, who was in high school in Salem, was an intern. And they both, they would take press releases around to the legislators, and they would do errands, and they did all kinds of work that interns always do, sometimes answer the phone, and just were generally helpful. So that office was just a wonderful office. Everybody thought so, and I still think so, and I miss Governor Attia every day.
Yeah, no, my last meeting with him was just a little over a year ago, and you know, that whole day I was thinking, you know, wow, it's been a whole year. But
I know.
The advantage is, because I'm doing the book, I have my last four big meetings with him are all on tape, so I can listen to it.
That's wonderful.
In fact, I'm going to go out to Pendleton next week, and there's a person out there who Governor Attia says told him a very flattering thing after Goldschmidt came in. And so I'm gonna take the recording of the governor saying that out to her and say, I need you to verify that you said this so I can put it in the book.
Oh, good.
So that'll be really fun.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, the last time I saw Governor Attia was there at the Pacific University.
Right.
And I had seen him when he was in the hospital about 5 or 6 years before that, and I went to the hospital to visit him, and I can hardly tell this story, but I took a book to him, and he was in the hospital, and his wife, Dolores, was sitting there in a wheelchair kind of by his bedside, and he put his arms around me as best he could when I leaned over the bed, and then when it was time to leave, his wife moved a little bit forward in her wheelchair and put her arms around me, and she said, Shirley, when are you coming home? And I thought, well, you know, they were so wonderful to work for, and wonderful for me, and I loved it, and I worked very hard, and I hated to leave, but my husband had been transferred to Colorado, and I wanted to go with him, so I just stayed a few more months, and then I said, you know, I told Governor Attia it was coming, and he said, well, you stay as long as you can, and when you feel like you have to go, you just come in and tell me, and we'll work it out.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. But
cool.
It was a wonderful 4 years for me, and even the time before that was very fun for me. Going back to before the work in the governor's office, when I was still just helping with, even before Packwood, when I put that trip together for the vice president to come to Salem for the Oregon meeting, the Republican Oregon meeting, when it was over, it was so successful and so wonderful. And when it was over, Governor Attia wanted to, you know, he kind of gave me credit for putting it together. And, of course, I gave the 10 people that helped me credit and so on. And then when it was over, I called the vice president's office and I said, you know, what I need is, I need those stick pins that the vice president gives out to people that visit his office and so on. And the governor, I mean, the vice president said, I'm out of those. I don't have any of those. I just have cufflinks. And I said, well, send me some cufflinks, because Governor Attia has 10 people he would like to gift for their work on the vice president's trip to Oregon. And just send me the cufflinks, and we'll figure out what to do. And they did that, and they sent me those cufflinks, and then Governor Attia took them to a jeweler that he knew and had the jeweler undo the cufflinks so that there were charms for the women. And so we presented those charms to the women for their help on that wonderful big Oregon Republican meeting. And I still have mine, so it was just wonderful. And of course they were thrilled, because it was special to have the vice president there, and it was very special that Governor Attia recognized them for their help.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, as far as I can tell, at that point, Representative Attia in 1964 was actually pushing for Goldwater, who won the Oregon primary in 1964.
That's interesting. I didn't know that, actually. All I know is that when he called my office, my intern
right.
said, I can't believe I'm talking. And it was a direct call. In other words, it didn't go through a secretary that said, well, so-and-so is on the line and so on. And so that's probably why. I have no idea what they talked about, but I know Governor Attia took the call.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And hearing about the jewelry, when Senator Attia was the minority leader in the Senate, at one point they had 6 Republicans, and then they had 7 Republicans. And he had made up for the 7 Republicans. They have gold Roman numeral 7 pins. And so there are only 7 of them, and I've seen 3 of them so far. But that's he loved those commemorative things.
Yes, absolutely. And he was quite a gift giver. I guess mainly a lot of folks are. I know Senator Stevens. I have tons of gifts from Senator Stevens in Alaska. One occasion, and I've forgotten which occasion it was, but he gave us. Governor Attia gave us all jewelry made by the Warm Springs Indians.
Wonderful.
And it's a shell. It's a necklace made of little pieces of shell.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he gave too many of those, but I know I have one.
Did you get a sense of when he started being close to the tribes? In 1982... there's a formal set of meetings that continue to this day called the sovereign-to-sovereign meetings between the state government and the tribes. And because Governor Attia established that, he's held in very high regard by the tribes. But did you get a sense of throughout his governorship, was that a growing relationship, or had he already established that closeness to the tribes?
Oh, it was already established. And I think... I was out there for the dedication of the airport sometime in the last decade, and all the tribes were there, okay. And then he was very familiar with the tribes when he sent me with Rudy to Alaska, and mm-hmm. that would have been like 1981. But since I wasn't part of the campaign, which would have preceded my coming there, I don't know about that period of time.
Right.
And then going back to the first campaign when he was a senator, running for his first governorship. Governor Straub was there. I don't remember contacting or being involved in anything with the Indians at that time. So I can't pin that down for you at all.
Okay. Okay. Let's go back to that 1974 campaign. In the 74 campaign, he, once again, his gut feelings, he knows about 3 weeks out that he's going to lose.
Yes.
And, you know, it's the only loss that he had in his entire career.
Uh-huh.
But when the campaign is over, he feels pretty good about the campaign. And then the next March, he goes to the Dorchester Conference, and he gets a standing ovation as he walks into the room.
Yes, I was there.
How did people feel? I mean, he's optimistic after the campaign, and yet, looking at it, it was the worst defeat by a gubernatorial candidate since 1950.
Yes.
So how did people really feel in the campaign about the outcome and how it went?
Okay, well, I, of course, was very new, and
mm-hmm.
and I had told him when I came on in September, I said, you know, I can get out the vote, but I can't save this campaign because the things that campaigns are just a management. You have to do certain things in certain order, and there wasn't time to do the things that had not been done. And the only reason I think he might have felt well is people that liked him were so apologetic that they hadn't done enough to help him win.
Oh, okay.
So he was filled with this euphoria that people still wanted him to win, and it was like bad luck.
Right.
And that people wished they had done more. That's the feeling I had. And I remember at the Dorchester conference that he did get that standing ovation. And he's always had that. In other words, it's him. It's the personality. It's how he treats people. I think people they just want him to win. They want him to do well. If he loses, they lose. But they don't blame him for it like some situations and campaigns. People that really work hard for you and you don't win, they blame you for losing. And nobody felt that way. And then he had this Republican conference right after that, which he was the chairman of. And so he had that to sort of show that he really can do things and so on. And that was put together really, really well. I worked very hard on that with him, and he was very pleased. And it sort of let people know that he's still here for them. He's still who he is. He isn't a loser. He's not a loser at all. He's really a winner. It's just taken him a little longer.
Right, and it sounds like he then naturally stepped into almost a statewide Republican leadership role.
I did, and I'm sure that's why, I'm sure you know that I got, when the Oregon Magazine made me one of the 100 most powerful women, all the people on the governor's staff thought, you know, why her and not me? But I think it's because I did. I was, the minute I got down there from Oregon in August, I started right in, and I was a delegate to the 1976 Republican convention.
Oh, great.
From Oregon.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm thrilled that you're writing this book, and I know it has to be absolutely accurate, and I hope that it is, and I can't wait to see the end result.
Well, great,
glad you're doing it.
It's a fun, fun project. Actually, there's a group. Roger Martin has an old timers gathering.
Oh yes.
And so I've been invited. I will be there on Friday. And
good.
It'll be fun to talk to people and ideally get some more interviews in. So
that's wonderful. That will be fun. I remember his name. I remember what he looks like, but I can't remember. He was the speaker, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the speaker, and then by the time you were there, he had just left politics. He's one of the people that Vic beat in that 1978 primary, along with Tom McCall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember Tom McCall. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Roger had just become a lobbyist when you got there, and he's been a lobbyist ever since.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah. So fun things.
Yeah. You should go to that. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Oh,
especially with your information now as you're putting this together, you have references that you can make that will help Roger tell his story, I guess.
Exactly.
That's what I want to say.
Exactly. Well,
wonderful.
even last summer, right after the governor died, Jerry Thompson was telling media people they should talk to me, because even at that point I knew more about the governor as a whole than anybody, just because he had so many different pieces to him.
Yes. Well, I hope you found him in your interviews as wonderful a person as I found him to be. I don't even I can hardly call him my boss. It's more like he's my friend. When I moved back to Washington to work for the U.S. Senate in the 1990s, he came back to four or five times, and I always met him there. He always met with me, and I took him all through the Senate, showed him all the secret places, the Senate hideaways, and so on, because I always thought if he was back there in the Senate, he would be a star.
Yeah.
Because he was so he had so much integrity, and he was so classic and so on. But he always said, you know, I'm an Oregonian. I'm going to live in Oregon. I don't want to go back there with that mess in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Of course, I thought he should straighten out some of that mess. I still think that.
Yep.
Anyway, he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah, when he would talk about national office, there were two things that he was consistent on. He said, when you're governor, you're one of one, or one of 50, but you're the main person in your state. When you're in the Senate, you're one of 100. And,
yes.
You know, he'd been in the legislature for 20 years, and so he didn't want to be a legislator anymore.
I know. I know, that's true.
And then he also talks, I haven't been able to get Bob Packwood to respond. I talked to Bob briefly at the memorial service. And to Elaine Franklin, but Victor tells of walk at a Dorchester conference, walking on the beach with Bob Packwood and telling Bob that Victor was not going to run against him for the Senate.
And really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Bob's the only other one who's out there, and so I can't put it in the book unless I verify it. But you know it. Victor was thinking about those things, but he clearly, as you said, he decided, I want to stay in Oregon.
Yes, that's what he always told me.
Yeah.
And I was very familiar with the Senate because of my work for Senator Ted Stevens for so long, and I could see him in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, and of course, we had Hatfield, who was also a wonderful senator, and he always said, you know, I don't want to leave Oregon. I was always surprised he would come back to Washington as much as he did, but then he was that was after he was governor, and he had, I think he was doing some work for the Japanese,
Absolutely. And then even after his gubernatorial run in 1974, he was back there fairly frequently because the National Republicans had tagged him as an up-and-comer that they needed to really, you know, stay in touch with. So he was back in D.C. fairly frequently. And during the 74 campaign, it was mid-September because he then went to the Pendleton Roundup right afterwards. He flew back in one day to President Ford's office, and they had other Republican candidates for governor. They had their pictures taken with Ford, and they were able to use it for a commercial if they wanted and that stuff. He then flew back in a single day, and he was at the Happy Canyon meeting that night up in Pendleton. And Dolores said, "Well, so tell me, is it really an Oval Office?" And Victor's response was, "I didn't notice, but I can tell you about the carpets."
Wonderful, wonderful story. And I'm sure that is absolutely true. But I remember when he went back, he met with George Bush. Let's see, President Bush. But something was going on with Syria. And I remember when he came back and I asked him about the trip, and he said he apparently wanted to talk to, I think it was George Bush, about Syria, and he couldn't get an audience.
Yeah.
They wouldn't talk to him about Syria, and of course he knew everything about Syria. And anyway, I've forgotten what that was about. I've forgotten even what president it was, because I remember when he did go back and meet Ronald Reagan, and I remember because he brought me a souvenir, one of those presidential pins.
Right.
He brought me back.
Right.
And gave me Ronald Reagan's pin. I've forgotten that. Well, I can't think of anything else that might be of interest to you, but if you have any more questions for me, I'll be glad to try.
Well, let's kind of end on talking about Ronald Reagan. You were there in 76 at the convention when Victor was a very enthusiastic Ford supporter.
Yes.
We have a wonderful picture just after Ford gets the nomination of Vic standing up, grinning, shaking hands with the person who's the head of the delegation right in front of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I was a
Ford delegate.
Oh, okay, good. In 1978, Lynn Nofziger from the Reagan people wanted to make a donation to the ATIA for governor campaign, and Carol Whitney knew, because she was trying to position ATIA not as conservative but as moderate.
Uh-huh.
And so she knew they couldn't have the Reagan donation unless they also had a Ford donation. And so she went in to see the candidate, Victor ATIA, who said, "Oh, here, you just call him and that's fine." And I actually have the results. They got $1,500 from both the Ford people and the Reagan people. But Lynn Nofziger didn't like that at all. And for the next 4 years, he made it very clear that he didn't think Governor ATIA was a loyal Republican, certainly not a loyal Reagan person. Did you get any sense of that kind of tension between the Reagan people and the governor, as you observed anything?
No, I didn't get any sense of that at all. And I don't know how this would fit into that story, but the year that I ran the Oregon Republican Party, I had both President Ford former President Ford came to Oregon at my request as the Oregon chairman or Oregon director, we wanted to thank him for his service, even though he was he lost the election. And he came. I had a huge party, big front page story in the Portland Oregonian, a big story about it. And Governor Attia helped me with that. Let's see. He encouraged me to do that, and he helped. He gave me somebody that would sell tickets, and so we had a nice crowd at the, I think it was at the Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that year, this would have been in 1976, I'm trying to draw on my memory here, I invited Ronald Reagan to come, and he came up, and I had a big event for him at the Sheraton, and I had originally scheduled it at the Hilton, and he found out it was, they did not have labor workers, and so he insisted that I change it, and I changed it to the Sheraton there at the Lloyd Center, and we had about 1,300 people there, but I don't remember, other than the governor meeting with Reagan when he came, because I had a few special people that met early with the candidate.
Right.
And Governor Attia was one of those, but I don't remember any tension in either of those acts that would support what you said.
Okay. Lynn Nofziger was a very interesting guy, so it may have just been him.
It could be, or it could actually be true, but it didn't rub off on Governor Attia.
Right, okay.
At least from anything I observed. And again, with that Reagan story, I can't quite get Governor Attia in this. When it was over, Governor Reagan said, you know, he really was complaining because he had come up to Oregon on a commercial plane, and he said he hated to fly. And I said, well, don't worry, I can find someone to take you home. And so I called my friend Lloyd Babler, who had a private airplane, a little Learjet, and two pilots. And Lloyd said, well, they're in Europe, but I'll call them and see. And I said, well, you know, this would be a wonderful thing, and we could count this as your donation to the Oregon Republican Party and so on. So he called the pilots. They were on their way back from London. They were home about 24 hours, and then Lloyd Babler said, could you take Governor Reagan back to California? And they said, and this is before he, you know, mm-hmm. Governor Reagan was thinking about being president, but
yeah.
He hadn't. Anyway, so I said, that's just wonderful, and can you go along with them to be host? And Lloyd said, no, Shirley, I can't go. You go for me. And so I went for them. So Governor Reagan and I sat knee to knee looking out the little window in the back of the Lear, visiting all the way down to California. He knew every single coast. He followed the coastline, and he told me about it all the way down. And we got into just north of Los Angeles, and he said, Shirley, look out, look out. There's my ranch. There's my ranch. and then we landed, and then I have pictures of Governor Reagan and I in front of that airplane when we landed in Los Angeles, because his assistant, who worked in his Los Angeles office, came out and took pictures and then sent them to me afterwards. So it was very, very fun. And everybody in Colorado, of course, has seen that picture, because everybody over here loves President Reagan.
Right. That's a great story. That's a great story. Well, thank you very much. And, if I have other questions, I know where to find you.
Okay, thank you. I'm so flattered that you called and asked me, because I care so much about Governor Attia. I miss him very much. And it's an important part of my life to have spent that time with him. So thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Talk to you later. Goodbye.
Bye.